Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
So we'll get to the Knicks in a couple of moments. Brian Windhorst with an idea of what direction they might go in for their head coach and if that's the right move or not. But people still lined up, wanted to talk about the Giants and the Jets. And, I mean, the draft is only 6 days away. So why don't we go there, and then we'll get to the Knicks in about 4 to 6 minutes. We'll get into a little NBA. Let's go to Dave in East Meadow. Dave, you're on 98.7.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Enjoying the show thoroughly.
Appreciate it, Dave.
I'm really focused on the NFL draft. I am so happy. Kudos to the NFL for doing it because it's like the only socially distanced type of activity we can all have in our lives right now. Saying that, with regard to the Jets, I'm a big Jet fan. Number one, I want to extend Jamal Adams. I mean, you should have seen Greeny's face this morning on ESPN. I mean, that was my face. Like, let's, as soon as we can, put this to bed. We're not going to rip up his contract. We're going to give him an extension and keep him happy. I mean, I heard the other day you said he's a culture changer. And that's how I feel. You need leaders. You need dogs in that locker room in any sport that are going to lead the way. And he's always been known to actively recruit at the Pro Bowl as well. So we want to lock him up. With the draft, round one.
What is happening in your house, Dave?
Yeah, that's my son. I'm going to move on.
Okay.
Round one in the draft, I really want to get one of those tackles. If it's not available, then maybe we trade down. But, you know, I'm not Kuiper. I'm not McShay. But everybody says this is a wide receiver draft, so let's hold off on that. The only caveat I'll throw in is if you can get Trent Williams for maybe a 3 and maybe a 2 next year, something reasonable, then we focus on something else in the first round and maybe trade down a little bit. But we need talent. We need playmakers. Jamal has to be locked up, and then we got to fortify the offensive line. That's how I view the draft. And thank you for your time.
Yep, thanks for the call. Yeah, I never think anything is so black and white where you absolutely unequivocally have to sign him to a long-term deal. I get that's a possibility, and I think it's a decent one. But you know, if you get offered a haul in return and you can change the look of your team in one draft, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of leaning in that direction.
Well, let's forget about the haul part of it for a second. If you're offered a first-round pick for Jamal Adams, would you consider doing that?
Yes.
You would?
Yes.
I mean,
For two reasons, I'll tell you why. Because a first-round pick is, I mean, and I need bodies, and I need good players, and I need to fix the offensive line and add receivers there is one. And two, as great as he is, and he's great, and you say this all the time, if I'm listing the most important positions in the game, safety is way down the list.
Yes. Yeah, I'd agree with that. So, I mean, if you're not going to pay him, then you need to be able to try to ship him and get what you can in return for him. That, to me, makes more sense because, I mean, as this thing goes on, you're probably talking about him becoming less valuable because at some point, teams are going to recognize that you're in a position where you've got to move him. And so I think that right now, if you're the Jets, you have all the options on the table. I think you can give yourself the best opportunity to maximize the return if you decide you're going to move them in the next week or so.
Yeah, and on top of it, I think you got to, I mean, take advantage of a team like the Cowboys who, you know, feel like, you know, they're a piece or two away from competing for a championship. I mean, I think you feed off their desperation a little bit. And on top of it, I mean, culture changer, yeah, I would agree. I mean, you know, he's the vocal leader of that locker room, and that could go one of two ways. I mean, if he's the vocal leader that's taking the message from the head coach and bringing it to his team, that's great. That's exactly what you would want. But if, you know, he's a guy who can't stand the head coach and players look up to him, that's not really in the coach's best interest to have him around, especially if he's unhappy not being paid.
Which, you know, we know that he would be.
Well, of course he would be. I mean, he was unhappy last year when they picked up the phone and answered, you know, trade calls then. And, I mean, he's in a situation now where, and it's smart by him because, I mean, the windfall, once we get through this pandemic and the new TV deals for the NFL are negotiated, I mean, he's going to want to get back to the table as soon as possible.
Yep.
Just smart on him.
Of course it is. And of course he should. Let's go to, we'll take one more in the NFL and then we'll get to the NBA. Mark in the car. Mark, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. I just want to talk a little bit about Jamal Adams. I think the thing about him is that if you could get along with him, if you could work something out with him, do that. If you can't, then you got to go. But you shouldn't be happy with a first-round pick for him. Because the whole thing with the trading star all-pro players for draft picks, like, what are the chances of you getting a guy equal or close to him.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you're just looking to replace him with another safety. I mean, if you're talking about moving him and not paying him, it's because you don't believe paying a safety is how you win in today's game. That's not a position that your system dictates you use premium, cap space or draft picks on. So I just think that's what it ultimately comes down to. And if you don't want to pay him, then you're going to have to move off of him. I mean, it's just that simple. But the one thing that I will say, just to push back on the idea of moving a guy like Jamal, is that you took him with the 6th overall pick and the guy has produced. He's become the best safety in football in 3 seasons. He's going into year 4. To me, it sends the right message to the rest of the guys in the locker room. When you draft a guy and he performs, you taking care of him. I just think that's something that's of value to your general manager and your head coach as well.
I understand that, but there's also one more thing, because, like, as a miserable Jets fan, I remember Leonard Williams, I remember Darren Lee, all these guys that we've gotten, like, so high up, projected to be so good, and where are they now?
Not on your team, but that's my point. I mean, you moved on from those guys because they didn't produce at the level you thought they would when you drafted them in the first round, but Jamal Adams has. So to me, I mean, this is a part of the argument to go ahead and pay Jamal whatever he's asking, $15, $16 million a year. This would be why you would do it. It's not just for the production that you're getting on the field, but it's for all the intangibles that he represents for your organization in the locker room in terms of him being a leader, but also the message that you're sending to the rest of the players.
Here's the other thing, too, though. I think it's the risk that you run when you have the kind of, I don't want to go as strong as dysfunction. Maybe I can. I mean, because the Jets have been kind of that dysfunctional.
That's fair.
But yeah, that's fair. But I mean, you just put yourself in a tough spot because, you know, you do end up drafting Jamal Adams and he does turn into the best safety in the league. But because you're going through, I mean, you're burning through head coaches and GMs. Now, I mean, it's on the plate of a guy who didn't draft him and a coach who didn't draft him. And it's up to them to make the decision.
Right. Right. You've handed the baton to the next Jets regime and now they have to decide, which, in some way, almost makes it more organic because they're basing it purely on football, not about, like, you know, did we draft him? Is he our guy? Do we need to keep him because of that? Like, they're just saying, is it worth it to keep him to make this team better? So I think in some way it might be a little better for the Jets.
Well, it's probably better for the Jets ultimately because they're just going to, the emotion will be taken out of it. It's not great for Jamal though, because I mean, that's usually when, you know, usually when you're probably going to get overpaid is when, you know, it's the GM that drafted you. Because there's that, I mean, there's
right.
that attachment.
But are you looking for what's best for Jamal, or as a Jets fan, are you looking what's best for your organization?
No, as a Jets fan, I'm looking for what's in my best interest, but Jamal's looking for what's in his best interest. And if I'm going to be on a team where I hate the head coach, we don't win a lot of football games, I'm not going to be, like, my demands aren't going to be reasonable. My demands are going to be what they are. I'm going to ask for as much money as possible, and if you don't want to meet those demands and keep me, I'll be a problem. And if you trade me, I'll go to a better team where I can get paid.
Okay, exactly. Rick, so you got the purse strings for the Jets. If Jamal Adams wants $16 million a year on a contract extension, are you giving it to him?
If he wants 16?
$16 million a year.
Or you have your 1 and your 4 waiting for you.
Or I'm getting a first-round pick.
Yep.
I'm getting Dallas's first-round pick.
Yep, 17.
I would take the first-round pick. They got to find a way to get the best out of Sam Darnold. That's really what they have to do. And
there you go.
as much as I love Jamal too, I mean, if I could find a way to get another corner, and there's some debate on who I think Okuda's the best corner, but there are some people that like CJ Henderson a lot too. I mean, at the moment, I would probably want as much flexibility as possible for Joe Douglas.
If I told you, and I don't know that this is 100% fair, but if I told you it's going to turn into Henry Ruggs and an offensive lineman in the 4th round.
Yeah, if at 11 I'm taking a tackle, and
you're
at 17 I'm taking Ruggs.
You're getting Becked in at 11, Ruggs at 17, and a guard in the 4th round.
Yeah, I would take it.
I would take it because you still have your second round pick,
and you got that early third round pick from the Giants.
You're just going to mention that as much as you can, right?
As much as humanly possible.
Yes, no, I know.
It's funny when
I hope that guy's the biggest bust in the history of the NFL.
It's funny when the last caller asked, where's Leonard Williams? He's just across the hall.
I hope that guy doesn't make the team, really.
With the Giants.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad that it's the little things that really move the needle for you, isn't it?
I still can't believe it. It's almost surreal to me still. I can't believe it happened. I can't believe it actually happened.
With Gettleman, anything can happen.
Yeah, he's like the Kevin Garnett.
Yeah, but that's not in a good way, though, Dave.
No, except trading back, apparently. Otherwise, anything can happen. All right, now I'm in a bad mood. All right, Brian Windhorst.
I love his war room, though, right behind his couch, the little desk right behind his couch.
He's got like a huge notebook filled with papers. He has a big bottle of lotion. I don't know if you saw.
Just in case his hands, in case he really likes the pick.
And it's just a little computer. And they show like other GMs who have, you know, these unbelievable setups. And this guy has, you know, papers strewn across the table with a huge binder, a thing of lotion. Oh my God. You can't make it up.
That's what happens. You fall in full bloom love with your fourth overall pick. You're going to need some lotion handy.
Well, he said they're never going to pick size two again. And he's been very accurate in that assessment, because they've gone six and now four. All right.
Well, he's a lot of high picks. What were his last two picks in, Chris, what were his last two picks in Carolina? What was his pick before McCaffrey? McCaffrey was what, eight?
Yeah. McCaffrey was eight. I want to say Shaq Thompson. I think McCaffrey is in between Shaq Thompson and Vernon Butler.
Some high picks.
That's not exactly a home run.
Not a ringing endorsement.
No.
Well, what do you guys want me to say?
Well, you didn't do anything wrong.
I didn't do it. I wasn't making the pick.
No one is blaming you. All right, let's see. We got it. So 15 was Shaq Thompson, Devin Funchess, Darrell Williams, David Mayo, and Cameron Artis Payne.
Yep.
Then the next year
16 was Butler and then Bradbury in the second round.
And then Worley, Sanchez, and Sandland. And then it was McCaffrey, Samuel. Samuel's a good second round pick. Moten, Deshaun Hall, Corn Elder, Alex Arma, and Harrison Butker. Butker was a good pick in the seventh round. So, yeah, not exactly tons of home runs there.
That's who's at the hell to the helm for the New York Giants going through draft.
We got to hear from Windhorst, if for no other reason, just to change the conversation.
Windhorst at sea!
Yes, thank you, Rosenberg. So, Brian Windhorst was on the
It's funny collective. Every time, though. It's in, funny yeah, every time.
There are certain things that you hear that never get old, that would be one of those.
Windhorse in space!
Do you appreciate him at sea better or in space better?
I like him at
sea. I like
sea.
Both.
I like
yeah,
him at sea.
I like him at sea,
yeah.
Yes, at all.
Yeah, I like him at sea.
Well, because that's the original, right?
Yeah, that's when it first started, yeah, at sea.
Right. Windhorse at sea. Now, where did that come from?
I think Peter was watching. I think they were doing the show. And then Wendy was doing a spot on whatever show it was, and just like the camera angle, like how they had it shot, it looked like he was floating, like it floating at sea. So he went with Windhorse at sea.
He didn't just go with it. He turned it into a song.
Hilarious, like though.
Well, it's sensational. It's sensational. All right. So here is Windhorse at sea, or space, or wherever you want to consider him at the moment. He was on the Hoop Collective discussing the Knicks' interest in Tom Thibodeau as their next head coach.
Thibodeau, I believe, is going to be a candidate for the Knicks job as well. He has been long represented by CAA, who Leon Rose ran the CAA basketball division, and Wes Wesley was one of his first clients, I believe, was Tom Thibodeau, when he became a coaching agent about a decade ago or whatever it was. He's got a real good working relationship with Leon Rose and Wes Wesley. I know Wes hasn't been named anything official with the Knicks, but trust me, he will be heavily involved.
So how would you feel about Tom Thibodeau as the next head coach of the New York Knicks, Rick?
I like Tibbs. I think Wendy goes on to say, I don't know if we have the clip, though. They asked Paul Pierce, who's actually been coached by Tibbs. And then, do you have that clip, Santi, about Wendy said afterwards about Tibbs?
The issue is, if you're going to go with Tom Thibodeau as coach, you're going to have to retrofit your entire roster to get Tom Thibodeau-style players on there. He's not the type of guy who can come in and coach, you know, 12 guys that you give him. And we learned that in Minnesota when he couldn't get guys like Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins to play the style that he needed, so much so that he had to go out and trade for Jimmy Butler and sign Taj Gibson and do stuff like that. So if you commit to Tibbs, it's a huge commitment across your whole roster.
That concerns me a little bit.
Well, you know what should concern you is of the three or four huge names that we've heard thrown out there that the Knicks would be interested in, Karl Anthony Towns is a huge guy that we have heard discussed. Mm-hmm. And now that's going to – I mean, how could you possibly do that if you're going to bring in Thibodeau?
Well, I don't think you could.
Right.
I mean, and the fact remains, too. I mean, you got a young team, and if all of a sudden now we have to go out and try to retrofit the roster to get the best out of our head coach, I don't know if that's necessarily something that that kind of undertaking is what we want to get ourselves involved in.
No, that's not what you want, man. Your coach should be able to adapt his scheme to fit whatever personnel that he has. It shouldn't be about the X's and O's. It should be about the Jesses and Joes. If you're Tibbs, a veteran NFL coach, you have to be willing to come in here and evaluate what the Knicks have currently, what they have the potential to acquire with all of the picks that they have, and people that would be potentially interested in coming, and then develop whatever, you know, basketball philosophy that you want implemented going forward. I don't think that you try to make this team something that it's not. I think that's where you get in trouble as a coach and as an organization.
The other thing too, Dave, that, I mean, Paul Pierce said, and he was coached by Tibbs, is that he doesn't necessarily know. And if the Knicks, I mean, if Leon Rose moving forward because of his connections, you know, representing players, like one of the goals here is at some point to get a disgruntled, you know, young star. Paul Pierce made the point that he doesn't know if Tibbs is that relatable to today's athlete, today's young player. So, I mean, I would want that. Like if all of a sudden now the New York Knicks become an attractive place because of the relationship the players have with Leon Rose, but they don't want to come because they don't really feel comfortable with the head coach. I mean, I don't want to get stuck in that kind of situation.
But isn't that the due diligence you have to do now? Like, before you hire him, don't you need to, you know, send feelers and flyers out all around the league that if we have Tom Thibodeau, what's the idea with him? If we have this guy, what's the thought of him? Like, there's no way you can be caught off guard hiring, you know, Thibs and then thinking that there are some guys around the league that are not interested in playing for him.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to make that hire as your coach, then why did you hire Leon Rose to be your team president? You know what I'm saying? You would have went after somebody that's already had experience working in an NBA front office, because that would suggest if you're going with Tibbs as your coach, you are going to draft and develop players. It's not like you're going to go out there and recruit guys to come to the Knicks if they know that they don't want to play for a guy like Tibbs. So, I mean, that's the part of it where you just wish you got some consistency from the messaging that the Knicks are sending with the decisions that they're making about who's going to be leading the organization. To me, if you get Leon Rose, you're probably looking at getting a head coach, yeah, that can develop young players, but also a head coach that has good relationships with guys around the league.
Yeah, but listen to, I mean, when you listen to the first part of that clip from Windy, and this is, I think we saw this with the Mets and Brody Van Wagenen. I mean, he's signing almost, I mean, exclusively the guys that were represented by his agency. The reason why he would hire Tom Thibodeau is because of his previous relationship.
I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't make. I get that, Rick. That I get what you're saying, but how does that make sense in terms of adding the talent to make this team better? If there are young guys that are in other situations around the league that are unhappy, I don't think that they're going to be clamoring to sign up to play for Thibodeau.
No, listen, I don't either. But I can understand. Like, it's almost why you would argue against not hiring. I mean, why you would argue against hiring somebody that's never done the job before, that's only been an agent. Because if you don't really know what you're doing, like if you've never done it before, you're gonna rely heavily on people that you trust. And he trusts Thibs. And I'm sure they've had conversations. Like, I mean, you know, hey, just so you know, wouldn't it be great if I ever became a GM? I would definitely hire you as my head coach.
But I guess the question then becomes, Rick, does Leon Rose have strong enough relationships with players where he can get them to see past Thibodeau being their head coach?
I can't answer that. I mean, I would hope so, but I couldn't answer that.
I don't love the idea.
Well,
that.
if you make Tibbs the head coach, then you have to believe that Leon Rose has got the answer, and it has to be that players would be willing to come to the Knicks, right? Like, that's the only way that you could potentially go down that road and actually make Tibbs the hire, isn't it?
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, I would hope that would be the rationale behind it, would be that, you know, he's already done his due diligence. He realizes that, you know, the players that they'd be looking at would be fine with Tibbs being the head coach. Because otherwise, I mean, otherwise now all of a sudden you're talking about, you know, a much longer process to get back to being competitive.
Agreed.
We don't know how long it's going to take with this team.
No, you have no idea. And you don't have any idea. I mean, how do you have much of an idea of how the players that you do have will respond to a coach like Thibs?
No. No.
I really only care about how two players are going to respond to a guy like Thibs.
Which is what, Barrett and Robinson?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. The other guy can take it or leave.
I can't imagine
Julius Randle.
Thibs and Julius Randle will get along too well.
Do the spin thing again. go tell him.
You have to ask the trainer for Dramamine watching him play. Hey, give me some anti-nausea, please.
I'm dizzy.
So I can watch this guy spin around.
I can't
handle spinning, it. It's spinning.
Put him in the close cycle again. Oh, God. Today on ESPN Daily, Michael Jordan's final Bulls championship was a huge moment. As the Last Dance docuseries on that 97-98 season premieres Sunday, Michael Wilbon shares his memories of MJ and the meaning of the Bulls' legacy. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. Was that what you were doing? We're talking Knicks and you had to play that song, Santi? Is that where you were running with this?
Oh, no.
No?
Oh. That song brings back so many terrible memories, Santi. So many terrible memories. Now, I forget what season it was. I mean, just name the season. It probably was that season. But that was the team anthem for one of our Islander seasons. So you had a bad year. Wasn't good.
Wow. Oh, no. Come on, man.
That wasn't good.
Well, we don't want to bring you back there. We want to keep you as sane as possible.
Guys, real quick, and I know we're talking about basketball right now, but on the Jamal Adams thing, I just got word that Jamal Adams nor his agent Kevin Connor put this information out there that he wasn't going to be participating in the virtual off-season program. That did not come from Jamal Adams' camp.
But is it true?
It might be true, Dave, but that did not come out from Jamal Adams' camp. That's what I was told.
Okay. Which means it came off from the Giants. It came off from the Jets.
Yep.
So phones started ringing. They're on a fishing expedition now.
Yeah. But listen, even if you want to keep him, is that a bad thing to do? To at least, let's see what, I mean, imagine a team comes out and says, we'll give you a 1 and a 2, like an offer that you absolutely have to take. I don't think it's dumb by the Jets.
It's not dumb by the Jets, but why inflame the situation? I mean, you don't have to leak the information that he's not going to participate in the virtual offseason.
Well, because like you said, they want teams to start calling and saying, what is it going to take to get Jamal Adams?
But Dave, but time out. It doesn't have to be public. There are plenty of teams, and I've seen it firsthand, where you write an email, you send it out to all the GMs and say, hey, just so you guys know, Jamal Adams would be available for the appropriate deal. You have to leak the story out.
The only other thing I can think of, Rico, is that they get in front of it. If they know that this is headed down an ugly road, they can say, well, listen, we Jamal Adams put us in a situation where we had to make a choice. That would be the only other thing I would think about.
It feels like trying to spin it
a little bit.
Yeah, they're greasing the skids. Like, this is something that they're probably going to do, and they want to get out in front of it and start to, create the narrative that fits them the best.
Yeah, I think by doing this, you make Jamal Adams the bad guy. By saying he's not going to participate in the virtual offseason, think about that. We're all under a shelter-in-place order. You're going to spend your time, your days, in your house. You got nothing else to do. So for the 3 or 4 hours that there are team activities going on while you guys are going through the playbook and meetings, you mean to tell me that you're going to decide that you're not going to do that? It almost makes it feel like Jamal Adams is not being a team player. Where we all know that that's not the case.
He could stop it quickly. He could come out and through his agent or himself and just say, that's not true. I will absolutely be there for any virtual workout or meeting.
Well, I mean, yeah, he could change it. But, I mean, ultimately, Jamal Adams feels like he shouldn't have to do anything in order to get his money from the Jets. What he's done the first 3 years speaks for itself. And I would agree with that.
Yeah, but, Dave, why would he do that? I mean, I think what Chris is trying to say to you is it didn't come from Jamal's side, but that's what they were going to do regardless.
Okay.
Like behind closed doors, he wasn't participating because he wants a new deal. But it wasn't made for, I mean, it wasn't supposed to be for public consumption. Because now Chris is right. Now he looks like the bad guy. Now all of a sudden you spin it, well, he forced our hand. You guys thought he was a leader. He's not. He's under contract for 2 more years. He wants to get paid now, and he's being unreasonable. We can't afford it.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly what the Jets are doing.
It actually makes me think now more than ever that they're probably going to end up dealing him.
And I'm actually hoping that he does go somewhere else. because this is ridiculous to treat a player like Jamal the way that the Jets have. You know what I mean? Like, you could understand the listening to trade talks around the deadline. If you're a general manager, you have to listen. But the fact that it got out that the Jets were entertaining those phone calls and now we have this less than a week away from the draft, I mean, listen, the guy's the best safety in football. Either you want him on your team or you don't. Make a decision and then move forward.
You're
what they're doing
decision.
Right now by leaving Jamal Adams in this limbo state, it's not good for Jamal. It's not good for the team.
Let's go to Sean in Orlando. Wants to talk Jamal Adams. What's up, Sean? You're on 98.7.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I just wanted to say, if you're only trading Jamal Adams for one first-round pick, the Jets are crazy. You got to get at least a one this year and a one next year.
There's no way you're going to get two ones for him. Come on, two ones for him?
You keep devaluing him like he's just a safety. I mean, he's of the mold of an Ed Reed, Troy Polamalu. I mean, he's not.
Sean, pay him then. Then pay him. Then pay him.
I agree. But if you're going to trade him, and I'm not saying it's the worst thing in the world, but you have to get more than just a first-round pick because half first-round picks are busts anyways. And this guy's a proven star all over the field, rushes the passer, plays in coverage. I think he has the most pressures on a quarterback by any DB since he came into the league. So this guy's all over the field. You can't just treat him how he's just a safety. He's not that important.
But when did we say he's just a safety?
You keep saying that as far as positions go, safety isn't up there.
It's true. Okay, would you rather have a great quarterback or a great safety, Sean?
We have a quarterback. We have Sam Darnold.
Oh, forget it. Forget it. You can't do hypothetical at all. All I'm saying is if you listed the most important positions in the NFL, safety is not a top five position. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly.
I've never said anything negative about Jamal Adams. I think he's a wonderful player.
Yeah, none of us have ever said anything negative about Jamal. I think what it comes down to is which positions are more important and which positions are you willing to spend large chunks of your cap on. I think that's how you have to evaluate the decision whether or not to keep Jamal. Because we all understand, yeah, quarterback, you're going to spend money on him. Quarterback's going to take up, you know, somewhere around 15% of your cap. Pass rusher's going to take up a lot of your cap. A corner is going to take up a lot of your cap. Left tackle, maybe a wide receiver. It's on down the line when you start talking about paying guys like safeties at the top of the market and putting that kind of money against that kind of salary on your cap for that position. That's all it is. You have to be able to evaluate it from that position.
This idea that you get two ones is just preposterous, though.
No, I don't think that's going to happen, especially because you're going to have to pay him. I mean, that's part of it, too, is that you're going to give up a first-round pick, and on top of that, you're going to have to pay him. You're not going to get two first-round picks for Jamal Adams. You can get a first-round pick maybe in something else.
And something, yeah. That's why I said a first and a fourth. I mean, if you could get a first and a third, it's a lot of value.
Yeah, that's a lot of value. I mean, especially if you're talking about the 17th overall pick.
Well, would you like get an impact starting player right now with the 17th overall pick?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're leaving it up to how much confidence you have in your general manager. I mean, to just blanket statement that you look at all these busts. Okay, you're right. I mean, there are a lot of busts. But you just have to have faith that your GM is going to make the right pick, and whoever they pick at 17 ends up being an impact player.
Right. If you're going in and saying it's going to be a bust at 17 because I don't trust the GM, then you have no chance anyway. It doesn't matter if you keep Jamal Adams or not. The future of the Jets is completely doomed.
Exactly right. And so far, so good with Joe Douglas.
And not to mention, you do have to be responsible with your cap, and the Jets don't have a ton of cap space. I think they got less than $5 million in cap space. So, I mean, giving Jamal Adams a deal, you'd have to rework a lot of other people's contracts, and it might cost you some guys that are on your team right now. So it's a complicated decision that has to be made, but it feels like as this thing has gone along the first year of Adam Gase and up until this point, that they have to make a decision sooner rather than later. It's at the point now they've got to do something.
Let's go to Train in the Truck. I always appreciate taking this call. Train, you're on 98.7.
Hey, guys. Listen, I'm a garbage man, so sometimes I'm in and out of the truck. I just want to ask Rick real quick. Were you talking about money heist yesterday?
We're talking about what?
Money heist. There was a show he recommended. I was just curious if that was it.
The show yesterday? No, I didn't mention. I have watched the first couple seasons of Money Heist. No, I mentioned Dead to Me yesterday.
Right. Oh, okay. I just wanted to, What I wanted to say was, remember a few years ago the Falcons had gotten caught putting in like crowd noise and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So yeah.
I was just thinking, what if when they do come back with sports, so you don't hear like dead quiet and the players, why don't they inject some type of crowd noise maybe? I know it'll be weird, but, you know, maybe it's not so preposterous. You know, I just wanted to get your diabolical takes on that. You know what I'm saying? That's all.
I think they could probably put, I mean, I think they would consider putting crowd noise into the broadcast. I don't think they'd be pumping crowd noise into the actual stadiums.
I would
so
agree
almost
with
like, that. Like a laugh track in a sitcom?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going through all of it. I mean, I think there's been some talk about maybe even trying to, you know, to find a way to, with the technology we have now, like superimposing the, you know, fans in the seats of the stadiums. I mean, you got robots. I mean, have you seen the mannequins?
Yes. Yes.
They got mannequins. Did you see the one video? I couldn't even believe I saw this video where the mascot, they're playing the actual game and the mascot is behind home plate steaming, hand steaming jerseys.
Yeah, I saw that. I did see that. I did see that.
But I mean, how do you pay attention?
They're putting fake people in seats.
Yeah. Fake people with masks on.
Yeah. Well, you got to be safe. Even the fake people have to be safe. You can't be too safe now. Could you imagine that?
What's, oh, my goodness.
Hey, Steve, what's he missing in row 3, section 9? He doesn't have a mask on. Got to get him a mask.
It's unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable. I mean, this is a weird time, man. I mean,
you're
some
not
of the
kidding.
Things, this is amazing. Would you guys like some clarification on how the draft is going to work, by the way?
The NFL draft?
The NFL draft?
Yes. Yes.
Well, there were some questions. Remember, we had that conversation about what happens if, you know, someone's Wi-Fi goes down or whatever
right.
it is.
Mm-hmm.
So they got a bunch of
contingency plans.
Yeah. So how it's going to work? Each club will submit its draft selections to the NFL Player Personnel Department through an all 32 team site. If the club is having an issue at the time of submission through this site, or the club does not hear the announcement of the selection on the conference call, a club representative can either call the selection into the player personnel department or unmute himself or herself on the league-wide conference call to announce the selection to the NFL player personnel department and the other clubs. As soon as the selection is received, a member of the NFL player personnel department will announce on the conference call that a selection has been made, and then the next team is on the clock. Not only are there those redundancies, three separate team of individuals are able to submit the pick, so if there's an issue at one person's house, two other team executives could submit. If a team is experienced technological issues, the player personnel department would be in position, here it is, would be in position to stop the clock to ensure a pick is submitted or a trade occurs.
So they have some parameters in place that
so you can stop the clock.
Skipped. Yeah.
So yeah, exactly right.
Because you can't have that. I mean, you can't, God forbid, your Wi-Fi goes down and something happens with the phone line or something, and then all of a sudden you don't get the guy you want. You can't have that happen. Be awful for the NFL.
Yeah, but I mean, back in the day, they used to call in the picks or whatever and have people turn in the cars that were actually there. I mean, even if your internet were to go down, if you have the ability to call out, whether it's a cell phone or a landline, you can tell the league what pick you want to make. I mean, I know a lot of people were concerned because this is different than any other year we would have a draft, but I mean, it really isn't all that complicated. There is the ability to communicate with the individuals with the league office to let them know what player you're taking.
You know,
yeah, Rick, but could you imagine? But Dave, could you imagine Dave Gettleman in his war room behind his couch, all of a sudden picks up the rotary phone to call in the pick and
yeah, the bat
and
phone.
He dials wrong, and all of a sudden he's got to redo it. You know how long a rotary
he'll
phone
have, like,
take?
Like Mrs. Simonson, yeah. Commissioner. I'd let Worf's from Iowa. Hello?
Wow. Wow.
You might have the wrong number.
Got the switchboard? Hold on, let me just call the switchboard to get connected.
What they used to do, like, I'd like to call Charlie Cat 9, right? Is that what they used to do? Some woman, old woman. Hello? Marvin?
Get me our big analytics guy in here. We need him right now. Get him on the phone.
Yeah, patch him in. Is this a concern at all for you, Rick, that they mess up where the colleges that the players go to at all? Or do you think that's a staple, like we're fine with that in this draft?
Well, it depends. Is Canty announcing any picks? Because if Canty's not announcing any picks, I feel pretty comfortable with the college.
I hope so.
I'm
not
doing any picks this year. No picks for me this year.
I hope they mess it up just so Canty has company. I hope that they mess it up all over the
place. I was set up, Dave.
I believe
not that I messed up. I was set up.
sure.
The guy on the grassy knoll, man. He just disappeared. He handed me a card. I asked him a question. He said, read the card as it's written. And then I went to find the guy. He was nowhere to be found.
Lorenzo Carter, linebacker. Clemson.
But see, you could tell in my voice, I knew that's not where he went to school.
That is our Windhorst at Sea. I can hear it a million times. It never gets old. And I agree with you, Chris. I defend you to the hilt. You were set up. You were. Because you can hear in your voice. Basically, if a thought bubble came out of your head as you were about to read what was on the card, it would have been, this is not right. I do not feel comfortable doing this. Someone please help me.
Dave, you're 100% right. What makes it even worse is that I just got through talking about the kid on ESPN's broadcast on the radio. I was just talking about the kid, talking about edge rushers to look for in day two. He was one of the guys. It's unbelievable, man. I don't know what happened, man. Somebody find that guy.
Have you ever seen him again since?
Never seen him before. Never seen him again. Hadn't seen him before that moment. Haven't seen him now.
So good.
It's unbelievable, man.
It's so unbelievable. Good.
Somebody had it out for me, Dave. I don't know who it was.
I don't know why.
I got to say this, though. This may sound crazy, but I can't get this out of my head. I mean, with everyone stuck at home, I just, in the opportunity presenting itself on the biggest stage to make, I don't know, to whatever it is, whatever these people do. But I mean, if you're a person that hacks, like is a person that hacks into stuff, I mean, wouldn't you have the NFL draft like circled on your calendar of something that you'd like to try to hack into?
Yeah, I guess, but that would be awful.
I know it would be awful, but I mean, that exists.
Sure. I mean, they say that, you know, the city public schools couldn't do Zoom classrooms because that was happening.
I mean, could you imagine that? Like, if all of a sudden, like, someone hacks into the NFL draft?
I don't want that to happen.
Like, if the Giants take a defensive tackle with the fourth overall pick, you think that the draft was hacked? It wasn't hacked. It's just Dave Gettleman.
You find the IP.
Derek Brown.
The IP address is Dave Rothenberg's house.
the police will be showing up at my house. What did you do? We needed the best offensive lineman. Take me. Now.
All I know is that Cleveland's IT department. I hope they completely changed that IT department after that whole the little DP thing they did. Remember that story?
That was a bad look. Yeah, it was terrible.
Can somebody shut this off?
Yeah, can you close the thing, please?
We have no idea how to shut it down.
Yeah, that's the Cleveland Browns. Saturday, that's tomorrow on MSG Network's Freewell, Houston, Camby. LJ Ewing, the 99 Knicks are back with a special marathon of games. First at 2 o'clock, Ewing dominates the Pacers in a conference finals preview. Then at 4 o'clock, Allen Houston's buzzer beater knocks out the top-seeded Heat, followed at 6 o'clock by Knicks Pacers Game 3 featuring LJ's unforgettable 4-point play. And at 8 o'clock, Sprewell and the Knicks clinch their spot in the NBA Finals. Relive the 99 Knicks run to the finals Saturday starting at 2 p.m. on MSG Network. Rick, that was a run. That was when a team goes on a run like that, it's different in hockey and basketball because it's months long. Like you're looking at from April to June of these epic runs.
Yeah, I mean, it's the best. It's the best. I mean, I love the NFL playoffs just because, I mean, it's, you know, the sense of urgency with each of the games, it's win or go home. I mean, you're getting game seven every playoff game, but to watch your team go on that kind of run, I mean, there's nothing better.
It's great. There's something special, just the longevity of it, Chris. I mean, we love football. Everyone loves football. It's
yes.
Most people's favorite sport, no doubt. But a run in football's quick, right? It's weekly, it's quick. Like, in 94, when the Rangers and Knicks were every other night, you had one of them playing and they both went to the, you know, game seven of the championship series. I mean, that was some of the best sports we've ever seen in the city.
Yeah, Dave. I mean, winning perpetuated itself when you have two teams, two franchises that are doing that in the same city. I mean, everybody's going to be locked in. Everybody's going to be dialed in. Everybody's going to be excited because everybody wants to roll with a winner. So, I mean, it's one of those things that, yeah, it's really special. I got to imagine it was that way in 69 when you had, four championships across all the major sports?
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, you had the Jets, you had the Knicks, you had the Mets. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But you know what it is, Dave? It's the roller coaster of it, though. You know what I mean?
Like, of
because
course.
I mean, because you're talking about long, you know, some long drawn out series. You know, you win game one, you're feeling great. All of a sudden, you know, you could get blown out in game two. It's probably not great for your health just going through it, but I mean, it makes me wish that I could just snap my fingers and get some playoff hockey right now. But
and I'm emotional mess to begin with. So when my team wins game one, I'm like, that's right, we're in control, looking good. Then you lose game two, and you're like, oh, we had a chance to take a stranglehold on the series. And then it's crazy what it does to your psyche.
Yeah, I love it. There's nothing better. I mean, there's honestly, and this playing playoff hockey, I mean, with the Islanders, we didn't play much of it, but I mean, just the level of intensity is such a different level than a regular season game.
Let's go to Jack in Hackensack. Jack, you're next up on 98.7.
Good morning, guys. I'm a little emotional. From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you guys. I work in Englewood Hospital in New Jersey. It's been a rough month, as you guys know. But in our locker rooms, in our lunchrooms, on our radios, we listen to you guys. Thank you for keeping it real, for keeping it light, for giving us hope. For football and for everything else. Other than that, Adams is the Lawrence Taylor of the Jets. We need to keep him. He's our heart. Believe me, it would be like the Giants trading Lawrence Taylor. The Jet fans just don't. They want to keep Adams. And Chris, you're right. We got to pay him. But I love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. I mean, your call, honestly, it completely makes my day. The fact that the people that are on the front lines of this awful illness and disease are listening to us in the lunchroom, and it brings him to such emotion. I mean, I don't know what else to say, but thank you. And I'm glad we can be here and do this for you.
No, there's no way that we can thank them enough for what they're doing, Dave. The doctors, the nurses, all of the people that are in the medical profession being on the front lines, they're putting themselves in harm's way in order to try to flatten this curve and get us to the other side of this thing so we can get back to the sense of normalcy that we're used to sooner rather than later. But I mean, I've actually been in that hospital in Englewood, New Jersey. So a special shout out to all the folks over there. They took good care of me, and I know that they're doing right by all the patients that are there now.
You know what, fellas, though? It's a phone call like that, and that could be my favorite phone call that we've ever had on the show. But it's a phone call like that and that kind of emotion with someone that's on the front lines that when I hear professional athletes complain about being in a hotel or whatever it is, it drives me crazy. Because, I mean, it's not everybody. I mean, not everybody is a sports fan, but there is a huge amount of people in this country, especially, you know, people in this country that are on the front lines, that are sports fans, that would love to have the distraction of live sports.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. So if you can figure out a way to safely bring it back and not put people in harm's way, I mean, it's important for this country.
Yeah, but I guess my point is I understand that you're going to be inconvenienced. Like Mike Trout yesterday, it's going to be an inconvenience. There are going to be things that you're going to have to agree to that you don't want to do. You know, being stuck in a hotel maybe isn't something that you really that interested in doing. But I mean, if you kind of take a step back for a quick second and realize, you know, that there are people like that last call that are on the front lines that have to deal with this every single day of their lives, putting themselves in harm's way to save people, and just listening to sports talk radio brightens up their day. Could you imagine what a live sport, like what a live baseball game would do for them?
No. No, I mean, it gives you
something. Doing like, it's part of you doing, like, you doing your part to help. Mm-hmm. We can't, like, I'm not a doctor. I can't, you know, I can't just jump into, you know, an emergency room or an ICU and start, you know, testing people or putting people on. I have no idea how to do that. Like, try to find the little things that you can do to try to be as much of a help as humanly possible. And if that means being stuck in a hotel room for a couple months,
so be it.
Being awake,
so be it.
Don't get me started.
You're not being unreasonable, Rick. You're not. I mean, you got to have some awareness about what we're dealing with and recognize that it's not just about you in this type of situation. We're all in this together, and we all got a part to play. Do what you can do. We're going to keep putting on the best radio show we can do on these airwaves from 10 to 1. Mike Trout, guys around baseball, we understand you might be inconvenienced a little bit, but do your part in order to try to get us back to some normalcy. Go out there and play a game you love.
You know what drives me crazy, though, too, Chris, and maybe this is just me being so us being so close to it, is that, you know, how many times have you heard this, right? Like, you know, you guys only go away for a couple days, but we're on a long road trip or whatever it is. The guys Like when you're a single guy, you'll have the married guys as soon as, I can't wait to go on the road. Why are you so excited to go on the road? Oh man, finally get to sleep.
Yeah.
Do my own thing. How many times have you heard that?
A million times, bro.
Yeah. Now all of a sudden that's no bueno. We can't do it. God forbid we're stuck in a hotel. Well, the last season, all you did was tell me how you couldn't wait for a long road trip. Now, God forbid you can't be in a hotel room for, stop, man.
But Rick, they're no different though. All the people that are violating the shelter in place ordinances everywhere, you talk about it all the time. Like, you can't get people to go outside. You can't get kids to go outside and play.
Now
that you're not supposed to do that, everybody wants to do it.
Yeah, I think that's common with people, right? I mean, you always want what you're not supposed to be allowed to do.
Dave, I cannot even tell you how many conversations I've had with guys with, you know, they're married with kids that say, oh man, I cannot wait. The second I get in, I'm going to go to my room. I'm going to turn the air conditioner on. I'm going to shut the blinds. I'm going to rent the movie.
Room service.
I'm going to get room service. I'm going to have a glass of wine. Oh, it's going to be unbelievable. It's going to be unbelievable. I can't wait.
Yep.
Like, cannot,
yep.
Doesn't even want to practice. Wants to get on the plane immediately so they can get there. And now all of a sudden, when you're talking about, you know, trying to help save your sport, that you can't be in a hotel room.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.